the future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome. It is another episode of Out to Coop Live. Yes, we are going all open phones and comments tonight. Yes, to see what's on everybody's mind. It is Monday, September 20th, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop Live. This, of course, is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. On Out to Coop Live, we talk to progressives, activists, and troublemakers of all sorts, right from our own backyards, from across the country. On Fridays, yes, it's our original show, where it's where Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. And check out, once again, The Wednesday Show is back in its groove. The Wednesday Show with Cyril Michaleko. Cyril, of course, is a progressive columnist for the Bucks County Courier-Times, the Intelligencer. And he joins me to drill down into Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and international politics. You know, we've got to mix it up on that show. You can get all our shows by subscribing to our podcast on Podbeans, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. And you can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. And if you're listening to this show live on the Podbean app too, or not live on the Podbean app, just on the Podbean app, you know, you can show us some love right now too by hitting that big green patron button at the top of the page. And you can help out the show. Look, you don't even need to spend a dime. You really want to help out the show too as well? Don't have that dime to spare? Okay. You can help out the show by heading on over to our YouTube channel if you're not there already. Smash that subscribe button, like the stream for the show, and hit that notification bell so you know every time that we go live. And right now, take a minute or two and share the show. Say, hey, why don't you get on over here? We've got some Out to Coop Live. We're taking some wonderful listener comments. Good evening, Emily. Yeah, Emily's already checking in. Fantastic. So we're broadcasting live also on Riverside.fm. You can join us on Riverside.fm, and you can call in tonight pretty much any time throughout the show. Details on how to do that are kind of in our kind of the show description, I think. You just kind of click on the link that's both in our YouTube chat and in the show description for tonight. Do this if you do want to call in, you do want to head on over to Riverside, and you click that. Make sure you turn the volume down on YouTube. Just mute the volume on your YouTube and listen through the Riverside platform. Otherwise, it's going to be like those call-in shows where you call a radio show and there's all this echo stuff going on. You will get delays and feedback, all that nonsense. So if you do want to call in, just click that little link for Riverside.fm and head on over, and we can take your calls. And of course, we're taking comments. We're taking comments on our YouTube chat tonight. See what's on your mind. The feeds were already filling up. It was just great. Before the show tonight, on Twitter, people are sending me all sorts of stuff, which was fantastic. We're going to get into some of that. You can also, don't forget, you can join us on our Discord server. Also, information on that in today's show notes and description. For more PA Progressive Talk, you can tune into the Rick Smith Show's live stream at 9 p.m. Eastern every day. YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you get your live streams, check him out there. He's got shows at WBAI in New York. He's got a new show out in L.A. He's got Free Speech TV. Man, Rick is tearing it up. You got to head on over to thericksmithshow.com for all the latest across all his platforms, right? And support the guy, right, who's been holding down the fort, kind of the labor front, for as long as I've been in Pennsylvania, let's put it like that. And you got to check out, of course, the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast, the amazing PA women stirring the political cauldron behind this podcast, rock the house, and they know where the bodies are buried. Ooh, and Halloween's coming up. Yes, make sure to follow them on Twitter at the Night Caucus. That's at the Night Caucus on Twitter. And subscribe to their podcasts on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Attention gamers, all you gamers out there, The Game Inn, that's with two N's. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based, black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show, and they've got everything from retro N64s to the latest consoles, video games for all platforms, collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, out the wazoo. And you know what? Now school's back in session. When your report cards are coming out, head on over there with your kid, because your kid will get discounts every A on the report card. Check them out on their Facebook page at The Game Inn. Follow them on Twitter at The Game Inn with two N's. Again, at The Game Inn. If you got a question, look for something hard to find, shoot them an email at TheGameInnPA. Again, two N's, TheGameInnPA at gmail.com. Special shout out goes, of course, to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at SongADayMan. That's with two N's. That's at SongADayMan on Twitter. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. You know, it was great to see the activity on Twitter before the show. You know, I said, you know, look, we're doing some open phones, open comments. What's on your mind? It seems like people, a lot of people have things on people's mind tonight. You know, it's been that kind of week, full of frustration and great organizing and, you know, kind of wondering like about the state of our democracy. You know, there's like everything from the mundane to the existential happening this week. So just to give you kind of a little sampling of some of the things that we can get in tonight. So we've got, you know, again, from that third Summer's brother, of course, huge tiny mistake on Twitter. You know, what's on my mind? People in power refusing to use it in D.C. while the GOP and PA wants all our private information so they can create a false narrative. Yeah, that's right. The PAGOP wanted to suck up everybody's social security numbers so that they can, you know, whatever, kind of sell our data and then use that money to kind of sell our democracy, I guess. Right. So you got that. And then what else is on their mind? Oh, yeah. We've got the Central York School District, right? Banning books. Yeah. No, no, no. We're not going to have any Rosa Parks. You know, we're not going to have any Martin Luther King. No, no, no. We're just going to ban that. Right. Suddenly, I'm kind of like waiting to kind of go on to a, you know, Scopes monkey trial all over again over there in York County. But look, don't just blame York, because this stuff is spreading everywhere across the state right now. And, you know, look, throughout the country. So we've got that going on. Let's not also forget that, you know, we've also saw stuff what's happening in on the border. Right. You see what's happening with the Haitian refugees. You got like, you know, like, I mean, it's really, this is like unbelievable. You've got kind of like, you know, border agents on horseback driving Haitian immigrants who are, you know, in dire straits, going after them on the border with horseback like it's some kind of Wild West rodeo. Like you kind of keep the darkies out. Right. I mean, that's what's going on here. It's like one of the most racist displays I've seen in ages. You know, and of course, you know, look, sorry, you know, yeah, okay, want to support some of the stuff that Biden's doing and things like that, great, but his border policy is no good, right? But you know, again, this there hasn't been a Democrat or Republican that's been great on the border in ages, at least in the White House, right? So again, just more stuff that we've got going on. What else is going on? And the kind of the good side of the ledger, you've got a rally that's coming up in Doylestown. It's a Build Back Better rally. Fantastic, right? Information on that, you've got on Wednesday, September 22nd at 7 p.m. at 50 North Main Street in Doylestown. That's the intersection with North Main and Court Street and Shewal Ave. You know, they got a rally going on kind of demanding that, you know, we build back better, that we get Brian Fitzpatrick, you know, Representative Fitzpatrick. You remember the moderate who just wants to do good for everybody. Well, he should be supporting the Build Back Better agenda and tax the ultra rich. Right. Look, we've been paying our fair share for a long time. It's time that we start taxing those ultra rich. You know, kind of have some kind of equality again, right? Have some, you know, at least, you know, we're not talking about kind of some sort of leveling the playing field so that everyone is an automaton and gets exactly the same thing. We're talking about getting back to some degree, not even getting back to, we're getting toward, right, a more equitable distribution of wealth in this country so people are not suffering. I mean, that is not hard to ask, especially after we just watched, you know, like four people go up first ever, three days kind of orbiting around the planet. Right. Sponsored by billionaires and SpaceX to kind of, you know, show us that we can all go to space. Well, we not really all of us can go to space. Right. But those billionaires, man, that's what they're spending their money on. Right. Space tourism. We know it. We know it. What else we got going on? Oh, what else we got going on? Oh, yeah. Have you seen the Masquerader? The Masquerader, Jamie Cohen Walker. Out here in Bucks County, you're going to hear on Wednesday, Cyril and I are going to get into this a little bit, his latest column where he's talking and what he's been posting on Twitter, right? Basically encouraging parents to go out and get kind of IEPs for their students, for their kids, right? Just so they don't have to wear a mask in school. She's telling me overt lie, right? Divert funds away from students who really need stuff so that they could, like, not have to have a mask in school. It's incredible. It's incredible. Another kind of good news. I mean, this is just kind of like an FYI one that Sean Kitchen's putting out, right? He just wants everybody to know, everybody on Twitter, everybody who follows it, right? He just wants to make sure that everybody knows that his new iPhone, right, shows it that he walked 7 miles today. And one, that's crazy because his iPhone is tracking his steps like that. Welcome to, like, you know, the rest of us. And number two, this is what a session day in Harrisburg looks like. Half of those miles came with my heavy-ass camera bag, right? Sean is definitely back to work in Harrisburg as things are kind of ramping up over there. And he's got a new iPhone. He just wants everybody to, you know that it's tracking you. Not that we didn't know that already, Sean, but thank you for that information. And then also, of course, right out in my neck of the woods at Kutztown University. Yeah, Kutztown cracked 127 positive cases of COVID this week. As it's just kind of still relying upon voluntary reporting, right? They sent out this email. I purposely did not pull this up. But you know, I see that right now it's a mistake. I should have pulled it up because, President Kenneth Hawkinson, COVID Ken is, and his like PR team are basically saying, hey, look, we ask students to voluntarily report whether or not that they've got the vaccine. And of the, like, you know, whatever, 2,000 students that replied, it seems like 80% of them have, like, got the vaccine. That's awesome. Isn't that great, everybody? The problem is Kutztown's got close to 8,000 students, right? So you're just putting out fantasy numbers, right, as a way to kind of assuaging the, you know, the fears of people. And then I get an email today, right, which just blew my mind all over again, that, you know, that our local faculty union is joining with the administration to try to find out how many faculty members are vaccinated. So they sent out a one-question survey. Are you vaccinated? You know, 100% vaccinated, one shot or not, right, or refuse to answer, right? That's the, yeah, and we're 4 weeks into the semester now, and that's where we're at. So, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I don't even know where to begin. I don't even know where to begin half the time. I think I do want to begin, actually. Well, I guess I've already began, right? So I'm kind of like beginning again, so to speak, or where do I want to dig down in? I think what is happening out in the York School District is disturbing. Hey, Shanna. I see Shanna's kind of joined the feeds too as well. I saw you kind of come in. York County, sigh, I agree indeed. And I also know that, you know, teachers who are out there and are back in schools are also being like, what the hey is going on in my district? But so, you know, to add insult to injury out there in the Central York School District, they've got a book ban that is basically making national news now, right? I mean, I don't know if you've seen this. Right. Let me read. This is a couple hours ago, shortly before the show. Newsweek just published an article on what's going on. So let me read you a little bit from the Newsweek article, just so you kind of if you haven't been paying attention, what's happened out there in your county, to let you know. Well, they are now nationally. So a school district in Pennsylvania is facing a nationwide backlash after an attempt to improve diversity led to a number of books on racial equality and diversity being banned. Jamie and Amanda Hill moved to the Central York School District 2.5 years ago, partly because of its leading efforts to improve diversity in the county, they told Newsweek. But a, quote, state of flux in the district may impact the positive changes. After a summer of unrest in 2020 following the death of George Floyd, Jamie said the school's diversity committee, of which he's a part, was asked to compile a list of resources for students and educators. He said the list was not intended to be part of the curriculum, but would supplement classroom material and serve as an independent resource for those intentionally seeking the information. In addition to the diversity committee resource list, the school was also considering changes to its lessons plans, primarily at the elementary level, that included reading Susan Verde's I Am Human, A Book of Empathy. A school board member allegedly became concerned about the book and questioned if the school would balance the lesson by teaching about empathy for police officers and first responders, Amanda said. Although the cover of the book features a non-white child, she says its message was about the power of good choices and being kind, not race. I could just go on with this, right? The Central York School District Board, Board President Jane Johnson said in a statement that a significant portion of district's parents complained over the content of the material. So in November, the school board opted to freeze the material. Johnson told local station WGAL that it was because parents felt the material was, quote, promoting unequal treatment of individuals on immutable characteristics. Now, this is one of these things that is just so disgusting, right? I mean, it's so disgusting. Why is it so disgusting? Because they're taking, right, just, you know, it's like you skate around the surface of, say, Dr. Martin Luther King's words, right? Judge by the content of your character, not by the color of your skin, right? And then you ahistoricize it, you remove it of any critical content, and then you use it to support your own grievances, right? Because you no longer feel... fragile white person, you no longer feel like you can just say whatever you want, right? That you're no longer able to make jokes about black people or make sexist comments and have people laugh at it. Instead, you're ostracized for it. It's upsetting to you. So you appropriate the words of Dr. Martin Luther King. And, you know, I've talked about this before here in Percocet. You've got, you know, one of the you know, this Yahoo down the street who's kind of, you know, very active in the Pennridge GOP puts up these big, huge signs, right? And not only did he appropriate that sentiment from Dr. Martin Luther King, he also started appropriating Frederick Douglass, right? So I'm like, oh, my God, how far can you go? How far can you go? Like, pretty soon, like, you know, I mean, these people have no freaking shame. Right? You know, pretty soon it's going to be Harriet Tubman and, you know, she was a free trader. Right? I mean, that's what they're going to start saying. Right? I mean, it's incredible. And so the fact that they would go back to banning stuff, banning books as an educational choice, it's unbelievable. Here's just a little bit more, right? Examples of banned materials include Malala. I'm horrible with names. I'm sorry. Yousafzai's autobiography, CNN's Sesame Street Town Hall on Racism, and other books, articles, and documentaries created primarily by BIPOC authors, right? Can you just believe these people? You know, and again, I'm just going to keep on reading here. Since then, students, parents, and members have argued with school boards over the list. Teens have been protesting in front of the school since last week to help others to help keep others informed. Jamie and other parents created the Central York Banned Book Club Twitter account. Brad Metzler, New York Times bestselling author and creator of the I Am series that follows ordinary people who change the world, is the writer of at least two books banned in the school board. Both his I Am Martin Luther King Jr. and I Am Rosa Parks books are not permitted in the school. I mean, these are just, look, those books, I've read both those books to my kids. My kids read those books. And if you're to glean anything from those books, right, you're going to learn like a little bit more like a critical history. It's certainly not everything that happened in history, but I got to say, right, in those kind of I Am books, it's not just about Rosa Parks was tired and therefore she sat down and then spontaneously started this thing. No, they actually put it in a little bit of a historical context, right, at an appropriate level. That's fantastic. Right? They're telling the truth in our history books. Can you imagine? And because it happens to be the truth that is coming from the perspective of black and indigenous people of color, that they're going to ban it. The only, like, you know, I am that they want to hear is with its I am George Washington. I am great white guy. Right? Yeah, Shanna's saying, I'll have to tell you about my board meeting last week. Oi. I've heard a little bit about that. I've seen some of the discussion, Shanna. Oh, my God. I can't even tell you. I can't even tell you. I mean, I see this stuff that is going on, and it's as absolutely comical that this is, right? And I mean, like, comical in, like, you know, a dark comedic kind of way, right? I mean, because it's deadly serious, right? This is, you know, the backlash. The backlash, or the, you know, maybe the last dying breaths of this kind of white nationalism. Although, you know, anytime you say the last of anything, you better watch it, because that means that you stop paying attention. That's for sure. So you got that going on. You got that going on, which is always super fun. Oh boy, I just got this coming up too as well. Okay, I'm just going to read this. This one just came in on Twitter, right? So breaking, this is a tweet that came out from Ryan Clark. Let me just give you a sense of who Ryan Clark is. He's a news and sports reporter. Let's see. Okay, news and sports reporter. A staff member at Mabel Rush Elementary School in Newburgh showed up to work in blackface on Friday, allegedly saying she was dressed as Rosa Parks and protesting a vaccine mandate for teachers. Did you hear that? Let me read that again. I even just misread that. I thought it was a student. Let me read that again. This is breaking right now. A staff member at Mabel Rush Elementary School in Newburgh showed up to work in blackface on Friday. That's a staff member. Allegedly saying she was dressed as Rosa Parks and protesting a vaccine mandate for teachers. Statement from the Newburgh schools on the latest racist incident. And this is what Newburgh School said. So I'm going to read it in its entirety. At least what I got here on Twitter. Last Friday, one of our employees reported to work in blackface. The employee was removed from the location and HR has placed the employee on administrative leave. The administration of Newburgh Public Schools condemns all expressions of racism. It is important to remember how blackface has been used to misrepresent black communities and do harm. We acknowledge the violence this represents and the trauma it evokes regardless of intention. Each incident report is always taken seriously as we diligently follow our policies to investigate and take appropriate action. We continue to work toward a safe and welcoming environment in our schools that are free from bullying and reduces mental, emotional, and physical harm as we move forward together in our mission of educating students. Right? Now, that school's in Oregon, so let's be clear. Right? But that gives you a sense of that this is, you know, what's happening in York, what's happening with these banning of the books, what's happening in the Penridge School District, what's happening in the Palisades School District, what's happening in the Central Buck School District, what's happening in, you know, I mean, you tell me your school district, right? Yes, I agree, Emily. That is unbelievably vile. Unbelievably vile. And Shanna says, yeah, we are on the worst timeline. You know, I get that sense, right? And I'm trying real hard to always remember right now about the amazing organizing that's going on. But you see the force of this just disgusting flood of bile, right, that is coming from the right wing is just... It is all sorts of disturbing. It is all sorts of disturbing. Remind you got something on your mind? You want to kind of throw it in the comments on YouTube? I'd love to. You got some links for me that you think would be good to have stuff out. You got events that are coming up. You got actions that are coming up that you want to get some folks out there too. You just let me know. Just throw that in the YouTube chat, or kind of, you know, if you want to call into the show and you got something to say, you want to chat for a bit, you can hit that Head on over to riverside.fm through the link in our show description for the day. Love to hear from you. Love to chat. Let's see what else we got here. So let's go take a look at... Emily says, I have an idea of what to do if any books get banned in my district. Love to hear it, Emily. I'll come back to that. One thing I do want to, I don't know if people have been, I mean, I guess it's hard not to see this, right? Because it's been all over the news. The Biden administration is getting some heat right now on its border policy, and I think justifiably so. This is from USA Today. It says, you know, pictures showing U.S. Customs and Border Patrol agents chasing Haitian immigrants or migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border on horseback are horrific, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki had said, adding more information on the situation is needed. Quote, I've seen some of the footage. I don't have the full context. I can't imagine what context would make that appropriate, but I don't have additional details. And certainly I don't think anyone seeing that footage would think it was acceptable or appropriate, Psaki told reporters. I mean, you see these folks on horseback in chaps, right? Swinging at the migrants, running them into with horses. Customs and Border Patrol agents charge migrants carrying only food and water and the clothes on their backs as they tried to scramble onto the U.S. side of the river. Let's go! Get out now! Back to Mexico! Agents shouted. One man stumbled and fell as he tried to dodge an agent's whip. Did you get that? Whip. When pressed on whether Border Patrol agents should be fired or allowed to do it again, Psaki said, of course they should never be able to do it again. I don't know what circumstances would be. It's obviously horrific. The footage, I don't have any more information on it, so let me venture to do that, and we'll see if there's more to convey. A camp of over 10,000 migrants who crossed the Rio Grande at a low point between Ciudad Acuña, Mexico, and Del Rio, Texas, have been waiting beneath the international bridge in Del Rio to open an asylum claim. U.S. and Mexican officials warned Sunday that those in the camp would be deported back to Haiti. Horace Campbell, professor of African American Studies and Political Science at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University, called the expulsion of the Haitians inhumane and criminal. Quote, the economic conditions in Haiti since 2010 have been unspeakable, said Campbell. And what the United States government is doing is unspeakable given the crisis in Haiti, as one person said. It amounts to something being criminal. It's just that. Now, there you're seeing these folks trying to make excuses, trying to say, well, we don't have all the information, all this. But let's be clear here. The Border Patrol... this is not new for the Border Patrol, right? This is the kind of behavior that has been cultivated, perpetuated, and allowed to continue for decades. It's only gotten worse over the past, 4 or 5 years or more. Trump's rise basically lit a fire and underneath or in the bushes so that all these folks just basically came out into the open. Now they're not even hiding it. To take whips, think about that, to take whips to the border and you have black Haitian migrants in desperate conditions. And you whip them like slaves. You just think about the role that Haiti, the history of Haiti and slavery. If you look at the dire economic and social conditions in Haiti, after a coup just took place there, and you have people seeking refuge, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, right? Those are things like I grew up loving about this country. You know, I was one of those kids that I took things at face value. Right. And, I was searching as a kid. I remember searching for kind of how to understand the good. Right. how to understand what's, you know, what I should be doing in the world. What it means to be a good person. I used to go to, you know, I grew up Catholic, right? So Irish Catholic. And well, I grew up more like Italian Catholic, even though I'm Irish, right? Or you know, look at America, whatever. But my dad's side is obviously, my dad's side is very, very Irish, working class Catholic. But, you know, my mom's side, you know, Irish and stuff like that too. Anyways, but Utica, New York is an Italian town. That's my, you know, at least the area that I lived in was dominated by kind of the Italians. So I say Irish working class, Irish kind of Catholic, but you know, it's all kind of mixed up and basically there. Anyways, and you know, it was those things too, as well. It's like, you know, I remember, you know, I was like one of those kids too. I would sit there in mass and I would read along with the priest, right? I would read, you know, the Psalms, I would read the readings, you know, as he was reading them. And I remember hearing about kind of like turn the other cheek. Right. I remember hearing about, you know, like, I am my brother's keeper. Right. I remember about, you know, those words about people who were cast aside in society. And, you know, the teachings were that Jesus showed compassion and was willing to stand aside them. So what you do to the least of my brothers, so you do unto me. Right. And I believed it. Right. I actually believe that. That's what these people were about. You know, and so, I, you know, I look at, you know, a good portion of my life was unlearning and being disabused of that ideology, of that propaganda. Because we all know while they were preaching that, and this happened even, no one will tell me directly, right? But happened in my parish. And it wasn't just one priest, right? Because you have everyone else there knew about it, or at least some adults knew about it, did nothing. Right? I've told this, you know, about on the show before too. I said, you know, my sister is kind of, she's got a, she's kind of mentally disabled, right? As a result of some medical malpractice and a really severe reaction to the MMR shot when we were kids. We have this weird allergy in my family. And I remember, I don't know if I've told this one too, but I remember when my sister was, she was working towards her first communion, you know, and she's, you know, did it a little bit later than would normally be the case. Cause you know, she had to kind of understand and read and stuff. And that always took longer because of her disability. But when she got to the point where she was gonna, you know, make her first communion, and she was so proud. Right. And we were so proud of her. I mean, she was like beaming. And I will never forget this feeling. You know, I went up and I was standing. I was like first in line, and my sister was behind me, and my mom and my stepdad were behind her. And I go up, I take my first communion. Right. And I'm turning around. Right, to go back, you know, down the aisle as you do, or go to the side. And so I'm saying this to my sister, and I pause for a minute, you know, and she's looking to watch her. And she's like, she puts her hands up and she's ready to take communion, right? And she's like, you know, and goes out, and the priest, Father O'Brien, takes that Eucharist, right? And kind of starts to go to my sister, and she's like, you know, no, she had her hands up. She was going to like, you know, take it on her mouth. And she was like this, and he's about to, and then pulls it back. And says, so everybody can hear, has this child made her first communion? In the most bitter, judgmental, horrific terms. And I watched my sister's elation get replaced by shame. And these were those people, right? Now, that wasn't the priest that was the one, supposedly at least, that I'm aware of, that was committing the worst atrocities. But that was the moment for me where I was like, this is a sham. This is a sham. And the more I learned to say, not only were there bad people, look, there are horrific people in the world. There are horrific, there's going to be, right? So those priests who have done the worst possible things to kids, those are horrific people. They might have all sorts of mental issues, mental problems, whatever it might be, but they do horrific things. What is worse in my book are those people that allow it to continue and cover up. My question back then, I was just thinking about this. I'm like, you're telling me all this happened and nobody knew? And people would say things to me like, well, you know, people were, you know, other priests, they were worried about their jobs. I'm like, worried about their jobs? They're supposed, I mean, this is my kid's mind, right? They're supposed to be defending the word of God, right? And not worried about their jobs. And if they're not willing to stand up to a priest who's committing the worst atrocities right in front of them, the whole thing's a sham, right? And it's the same dynamic. Look, it's not just the Catholic Church, right? This is the thin blue line nonsense when you talk about police officers. They want us to say, well, there's a few bad apples. Yeah, okay, great. There's always going to be horrific people doing horrific things. But guess what? When you've got an entire structure around it and people being unwilling to stand up against those folks and allow it to continue, that is worse. There is a section of Dante's hell for those people reserved and open and welcoming, because there's more of those people than they are of the even the horrific ones. So, anyways, I think about that stuff a lot. You know, I think about that as kind of why we do what we do. Anyways, Emily was saying she has an idea what to do if any books get banned in their district, right? She has a story time in front of the school with a bullhorn, story time with the banned book. And this is, yeah, this story time with a banned book, right? I think that's a great idea. And you're seeing some actually really creative stuff. I saw that there was a woman highlighted. I don't have the article up right now, although I would share it with you now. But there was a woman, you know how they get those little libraries that people are putting up around towns and stuff? They're stocking them with banned books, right? It's okay. We'll do the little library and we're going to stack them with banned books, right? You know, there's so many different creative ways that we can act, you know, support our communities and basically say, no, we are not going to stand in the way. Because look, these people that are doing what they're doing in the school boards, what they're trying to do to our schools, right? To set us back, you know, to like Jim Crow South for everybody. Right. Well, not everybody. Right. Let's be clear. They want to just keep their own dominance. Right. What they're doing, they have to be stopped. Right. We cannot allow this to go on because, look, you know, if we just walk away, we're enabling them. Right. You know, and we'll say, you know, chances are if you're listening to this show, right? I mean, you know, you're already doing what you can, right? You are already looking involved and kind of, you know, so look, I want to be clear. You know, the one of the things that happens a lot in the left, right? You know, I'm using left pretty broadly here, right? Is that, you know, because there's so many of us who are trying to kind of find ways to do the right thing. That, you know, we put this unrealistic burden on ourselves that, you know, I just got to keep on doing more and doing more and doing more. And yes, of course, we always can do a little bit more, right? We can always kind of do a little bit more, right? But, you know, look, social change is not done by messiahs, right? And so it helps nobody to have a whole bunch of little messiahs run around or little martyrs running around. Right. You know, until we just kind of burn out and collapse. Right. And I say that as one of the problem people. Right. You know, and I've, you know, again, I've said this on the show before too, as well. It's like, you know, I hit a level of burnout that I have never had in my life. Not long after we had our strike at Kutztown University. Right. And the reason why is because, we had all this amazing beauty, right? We had all this amazing organization. We had, like, we got a glimpse of what a different future could be, right? And it reminded me of, like, you know, we were organizing around the, you know, the global justice movement on the kind of the late 90s and early 2000s, right? This whole idea about another world is possible, right? What the Zapatistas would say, you know, you could basically taste it, right? You could get a little taste of what that future could be. And yes, it's a long ways away. And yes, it's a lot of work. And yes, we might not see that fruition in our lifetime, right? But maybe for our kids, we can get a little bit closer. Maybe for that next generation, we get them a little bit closer towards that possibility because it is so sweet. Dominated by love and not hate. Dominated by cooperation. Dominated by at least, like, yes, there's always going to be differences, right? But that kind of sense of we're working on something better, not trying to just grab something for ourselves. And look, I'm a firm believer there's always going to be those people that are going to try to do that, right? There's always going to be the people that are going to be selfish. There's always going to be the people that are going to try to get it for them. The question is, as a society, do we organize a society in such a way that maximizes and rewards those people? Because that's what we're doing right now. Or do we have a society that's organized around maximizing and rewarding a cooperation, mutual aid, love, right? It's a good question. And I think that's what we have on our plates right now. And that's why I think it feels so big, because it is. Let's be frank about it, right? Oh, boy, oh, boy. Yeah, Shanna says burnout and collapse is all I know. I hear you. I hear you. Well, I'll say this right now. Like, I'm struggling with this right now. Is like, you know, we had Steve Oros on the show a few weeks back. Steve Oros was a faculty member at Kutztown University who has recently had a heart transplant. Was finally cleared to come back to work this fall. But, you know, only on the condition, his doctor said, you know, only online, like, because as long as we still have this pandemic out there, you are at, like, the highest possible risk of severe or fatal consequences of contracting COVID. So there's no way you're going back into a classroom, right? Especially at a university that has, like, laughable protocols when it comes to keeping people safe. So the doctor said, yeah, we'll clear you to work. And, like, he was all happy, go back to work, I'm excited. Going to go to the administration. Okay, how can we make this work? What do we need to do? And they're like, nope, either you're back in the classroom or, you know, I'm sorry. Can you believe it? I can, I guess, right? We have a student organization. I should bring this up too as well. We have a student organization at Kutztown called KU Activists, right? Kutztown University Activists. And, they have been recently, see, of course, I'm going to search for them because I don't have it right up there. That's awful. KU, there we go. So they've been, you know, one of the things that they do is they post stories, right? They post stories of, from students and from staff members and things about their experiences, right? And they collect them, post them up Instagram and things like this. And that's just not everything they do. Let's be clear. So let's go here. But here's something, this is from an anonymous KU student, and this is a really powerful move, right? So I am a disabled student who had all of my classes accommodated for the 2020-2021 school year to be online. I am at high risk for COVID-19 complications, but was forced to come back to campus even though I do not feel safe. When I asked the DSO, the Disability Service Officer, before the semester started, what they are doing to support students like me, this was the response. There is no support. This is the response I got. As a senior, none of my classes are offered virtually, so I was told Their option for me is to transfer. They act like they need money, yet tell me to leave. I have yet to transfer multiple classes due to my professors refusing to wear a mask. Professors refusing to wear a mask. How about that? With that said, this is from the email, apparently. They said, with that said, here are some of the options for a fall. Work with your advisor, department chair, to adjust your course schedule to fully online courses. In other words, go find them for yourself, kid. Or secondly, if you are unable to enroll in all online courses, you can consider taking a leave of absence, an LOA, for the fall semester. You may contact the registrar's office at regoffice@kutztown.edu for more information. While you're on LOA, you may consider taking online courses at another university and transferring them back to KU. To ensure that your courses will transfer back to KU, you should consult with your advisor or department chair and complete a permit to study at another college form. You may explore other options. This is number three. You may explore other options for transferring to an online university that specializes in online and remote study options. In other words, go away. Go away. Can you believe that garbage? This right here, I can't tell you how much this represents so much of my experience of trying to deal with the administration at this university. I love the students at the university. And, you know, again, you hear this at students, you know, faculty at other universities and the Pashi system and other universities too as well. You get this kind of nonsense. Instead of accommodating and being the caring community that the university claims to be, what do? They basically say, hey, look, go do this. Go talk to that person. Go talk to that person. Go talk to that person. You go do these things. Or go to an online university. We don't really care. Just stop bothering me. It's pretty remarkable, right? Here's another one from KU activists. This is, again, different anonymous student. It's only been a week and I already feel extremely unsafe due to the carelessness of the university. I had to visit a staff member's office, and the whole time I was there, they had no mask on. They even went on to tell me that they, quote, hate these stupid masks, unquote. There's also been more than one occurrence where students would pull down their mask to eat in class and not just wear one or not just wear one at all. Having to deal with all this in extremely small classrooms where you're only inches away from the person sitting next to you makes it even worse. I should be focusing on my classes, not chances of getting COVID-19 from going to class. Beautiful, right? That right there is the world we're in. And yet, for reasons that I don't really understand, we have... Maybe it's just in my fantasy world, right? In this kind of fantasy mind I have, where I just imagine this is how people act. Where I feel when I go to work, when I go to, and I know that this stuff is going on, I'm experiencing it myself. I'm just like horrified and outraged and pissed. Right to the point there, that's it. You know, I should just not show up. Right. But I also know, right, if I don't show up just as an individual, right, you know what's going to happen, right? They're going to fire me and nothing gets changed. Right. So I can feel good about myself. The only difference being I won't have a job. Right. That's always the truth. That's why collective action is the answer. Right. That's why we organize together and we could all walk off the job. And people will say over and over again things like, well, you know, that's illegal and that'll be a violation of our contract and things like, yes, look, you have all this rhetoric out there about, you know, we have these arguments, you hear this kind of these refrains that go out there, these statements that, you know, the university works because we do, right? That's when I was organizing, when I was doing organizing work with a kind of adjunct faculty and graduate teaching assistants down in DC, as one of those, you know, one of those mantras that I hear, right? And our working conditions are our students' learning conditions and vice versa. Students' learning conditions are our working conditions. That's about solidarity. The university works because we do. Recognizing the mission of the university is about what we do in the classroom, not what the bean counters do. And that's a story of just the specific work that we do. This is a story of workers, right? Ford doesn't produce cars. The workers of Ford produce the cars. And if those workers refuse to produce the cars collectively, there's no cars. That's what unions are about. That's what collective action is about. Right? So it's been, you know, I know it's, this is not just at Kutztown, but it's a bunch of places. It's been hard to feel the lack of collective willingness to basically say collectively enough. And I read these articles all the time about how, you know, certain workers are just not, are not going back. Their message, no, we're not doing it anymore. And then you hear these other articles like in Forbes and things like this, when they basically say that, you know, the nature of work itself is going to be fundamentally changed by this, because so many workers realize that, you know, this whole drudgery about going to the office and dealing with the nonsense in the office, things like, they don't want to do it anymore. If they can't be virtual, they're not going back. Right? Now, to be clear, I'm not one of those, right? I just would like decent working conditions, right? Good luck with that. That idea, until we have that kind of effective shift, right, where we've trusted enough in each other to stand with each other to say, no, I will not be abused. I will not be exploited. I will not be forced to go back and work in unsafe conditions. And as part of my charge, and this is, you know, as a faculty member, as part of my charge, I extend that to my students. My students recognize that. I'm saying my students broadly here. I mean, you see these students who are beginning to organize, right? They're organizing like they have more at stake than some faculty and staff members do, right? At least they see the urgency, you know. And this is the brilliance of youth, right? I think that's some of it. I'd hate to kind of resort to cliches, but that willingness to kind of that take the risk, right? Recognize the urgency and act on it. So, I don't know. I wasn't really planning on talking about that tonight, but here we go. Yeah, so that's some of the stuff on my mind. Gonna be out there. It's got some more things you want to throw my way. I'd love to chat about it. Love to see things. Got some articles you want to throw on? That'd be great. Had a bunch of stuff just kind of noted here. Let me kind of take a look at my little list. Why is it a little list? I don't know why it's a little list. It's not a little list, but I call it a little list. Why I'm using the diminutive? I'm having a conversation with myself right now, right? Oh boy. This is something I did not read because I tagged it and said I gotta read this later, and look, it's asking me to log in, so good, I'm not gonna be able to read it right now because this powerful Democrat, this talk about Manchin, about is going to be probably the one who's going to write a bunch of our climate plans. This is one of the frustrations we see what's happening in DC right now. You got this major infrastructure bill, and you've got a few Democrats who look like they're willing to go down in history as being the ones that stymied a major shift this plan, which is disgusting. Shanna just said, you see that Pfizer is getting ready to move vaccines for kids. Yes, I saw. They said it was, I believe, said they think that they're going to seek approval now. And they said it's safe and effective for kids 5 and older, if I read it correctly. That is huge news. Especially for those of us who are living in school districts where our kids are going into, you know, basically like, you know, biohazard every day. So I'm very, very excited about that, to see that they're moving there, because the there's, you know, reports that have been, there's been reporting about this, you know, for the past several weeks now, about, you know, they're expecting maybe early 2022 is when we'd see a vaccine for kids. If that's getting kind of pushed up through the Pfizer vaccine, that's really good. We also should say that, you know, Pfizer has been getting a lot of the, you know, attention in the vaccine, because they basically have been kind of out in front and getting approvals and things. However, there was also some reporting that came out about the Moderna. For those of you folks who have got Moderna, Moderna fell behind a little bit, just in terms of the numbers of doses that they were producing. There were some production issues and some things like this, but they've still been kind of plugging along. And they've actually finding out that Moderna is proving to be even more effective than Pfizer in terms of the longevity of its protection and against some early indications around with the Delta variant, which that's also good. You know, so there's these really, you know, and that's the thing I always have to remind myself of, is like, look, the tools are right there, right? It's not as if we're in the middle of this situation where, you know, we're just all on our own. There's nothing we can do. We just have to figure, you know, decide whether we're going to take the risk or not. We actually have the tools to do it, right? We actually got the vaccines. We actually have, we know what, how to stop this stuff. It's just that we're having those tools taken away from us as communities, which is crazy. So, but that is super news. I got to say, that is super news. If that pans out, you know, I'm always kind of like, let's take it one step at a time. Let's make sure that we're not rushing anything. You know that I have that thing on my Facebook profile, which, you know, I know that some people have it too as well. It's that little ring, you know, you put those little frame out, and it's, so I guess it's not up there anymore. I guess it disappears after a while. It says, like, you know, I'm deeply skeptical of authority. Yeah, I'm fully vaccinated, you know. And, you know, I'm one of those people, right? So when I'm looking at Pfizer, right, I'm, you know, looking at, like, the promise of vaccine is great. But let's also not kind of, let's not underestimate the profit motive here. So, you know, I tend to be cautious about this stuff, because I would say, let's look at kind of carefully at the science and make sure that this is not a company that's just looking to capitalize and being first out of the gate, to get this out there, especially since we're talking about kids, right? And the reporting suggests so far that it's not that, you know, it looks like that. No, actually, it looks like this is going to be effective, which is some fantastic news for right now. So I don't know. And then meanwhile, we've got all this kind of, you know, this news, you know, there's all this stuff. I mean, I don't know, ever since like this Met gathering thing, believe me, I'm not going to talk a whole lot about this, but I had to take a little break from the news for a bit, because I know it was so dominated by this, you know, this news cycle. You know, like, I've never been one of these people that has really, like, followed celebrity culture all the time, right? And it's not, you know, and I'm not saying I've never followed it or something like this, or I'm completely unaware and pop culture is bad. No, not like that. I'm just like, you know, some people really get into the, like, you know, the whole histories of individuals and all this other kinds of stuff, and, you know, the machinations of their relationships and their lives and what's happening and all this stuff and the slights that they incur and all that kind of stuff. It's never been kind of my, where I've invested, right? It's just not it. So what, you know, when I started seeing things like, oh, look, AOC's got the tax the rich dress and things like this, and, oh my God, is it that? I'm like, oh, please, no, let's not do this, right? And then on the other hand, you've got a really kind of troubling story about, you know, this young woman, Gabby Petito, who now it looks like they found, you know, her body. There's like in-depth coverage about that stuff. And look, I don't want to minimize what's going on there, but, you know, it shows you what happens when you have a story that the media and the dominant media feels like we're gonna go all in on this. And so the amount of kind of stories and coverage and intimate detail that you're getting about these specific stuff is just immense, right? And, you know, and I wish, you know, my own school district, I wish they would do that for Joan Cullen, right? Who's basically, the leading force behind the Pembridge School District's kind of right-wing QAnon, you know, turn, right? Where's the reporting for that, right? I mean, look, it's not that there's no story there. It's a compelling story. You can frame it like a Star Wars saga, right? The dark side, right? It's like, it's a classic story of like bad people. It's like a right-wing mob story. I mean, come on. I mean, this is like a gimme. And if I ever got to the point where I could be self-sustaining for doing the work of Raging Chicken or some sort of organization like Raging Chicken, man, I would jump so fast because that stuff would be awesome to cover. The stories that you can tell and all that. Now, look, I seriously recognize the constraints that a lot of reporters are under. So I want to be clear about that. Like, I know that, you know, newsrooms have been cut and all this, and you've got editors to answer to and funders and all that stuff. So I understand the dance, right? There's no kind of perfect, but that's what I'm saying. If I could do this, right, the no bosses kind of model where, you know, whatever, you know, the worst that's going to happen if I say something that offends somebody, right, is someone who's kind of, you know, individual who's a patron has been so generous in supporting the show is going to pull back, you know, is going to no longer be a patron. And that'll suck, right? But, you know, no one's got pull over what I say on this show or what we have written in Raging Chicken over the years, which is great, right? So there you have it. So, you know, we shall see. The other news that I should say this too as well, this is kind of just popped earlier today too as well, is that the Supreme Court just announced that it has set the date for oral arguments in this case that comes out of Mississippi that will directly confront Roe v. Wade, right? So that it's those oral arguments are going to be heard on December 1st. The law in question challenges the court's previous ruling in Roe v. Wade and subsequent cases by imposing restriction on abortion earlier than the recognized point of fetal viability when a baby would be able to survive outside the womb at approximately 24 weeks of pregnancy. So that's the kind of at the stake of there. So we're going to be kind of hoping to have some folks on the show to kind of talk about that case, to really unpack it early. So we're organizing around that too as well. Like we don't have enough on our plate already, right? You need that. So there you have it. There you have it. Yes, yes. That emoji has been me, Shanna. the angry emoji with the thing right across it there. So got a lot on a plate here. So, okay, I can't resist this one too as well. And because when I see stories like this, it's like, you know, this is the other part of the world that we're living in, right? So now you have Kyrsten Sinema. Is now threatening to kill her own infrastructure bill, right? In my mind, this is some of the bleed of celebrity culture right here. When the attention is the attention seeking of whether you're Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema or these individual House Democrats who are just kind of all about trying to pop in and get themselves in the media for the week. Here, so look, this is coming out of, I'll read this last one and then I'll start wrapping things up for tonight. So this is a kind of New York Magazine. This is by Jonathan Chait. So I'll just read the first couple of paragraphs for you so you get a sense of what's happening here. So here's what needs to happen for Joe Biden to have a successful domestic legacy. Like, look, let me be clear about this. That kind of sentence drives me insane because I could give a crap about his legacy. What I care about is like, legislation is going to impact people, right? He gets a bump for it. Great. That's fine. But why do we frame it as Joe, like, why frame it as like Joe Biden have a successful legacy as opposed to if we're going to be able to seriously tackle climate change, if we're going to be able to go address the gross inequality of wealth, like, and income in this country, right? If we're going to be able to kind of get the rest of the other half of the children out of poverty. I mean, come on. Anyways, well, it's a little hobby horse. So, say Democrats in Congress need to negotiate with themselves and determine what new social spending they agree on and how they can agree to pay for it. That may very well happen, but it is not happening at the moment. What's happening instead is a series of escalating threats. The latest comes from a band of centrist House Democrats joined by Senator Kyrsten Sinema, who preposterously warned that if the bipartisan infrastructure bill does not pass the House next week, they will refuse to back any new domestic legislation. There you go. That's the state we're in right now. Democratic Party leadership at your finest, I'll tell you that. Sort of here. So I'm just going to shut up now before I go off on it. So listen, everybody. Listen, I appreciate folks kind of dipping in and staying with us for a little bit tonight. Thank you for those folks who were kind of sending me stuff ahead of tonight when I just basically put a little announcement, hey, I'm going to do an open phones tonight. What's on your mind? And boom, 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 boom. Lots of stuff came my way. I hope Sean is going to kind of make peace with his iPhone that is tracking him. Especially as he's back to work kind of more full time in the Capitol now, is that things are getting back up and running as we're getting all ready for Fraudit to go full on. And the GOP is going to, you know, you watch what's going to happen. Pennsylvania is going to be crazy, folks. I mean, you all know that. I mean, a lot of folks who are listening from Pennsylvania, you know what's going to happen in this Commonwealth. It is going to be something else. So whatever. So thank you all for tuning in tonight. We're going to say a good night. I want to remind everybody that you can help support this show multiple ways. But the best way you can help support the show, the surest way you can help support the show, is become a patron by going to patreon.com/rcpress. You become a patron for as little as $5 a month. It helps make this show possible. We can tune in. Why we were able to kind of bring on Cyril Mikulenko, and we can have the show, the Wednesday show. And Cyril and I are going to be talking about his new column on Wednesday. We're going to be talking about some additional craziness in Bucks County. We talk about some, you know, accountability in the media, too, as well, will be there. Please do tune in for that. That show is going to get released kind of first thing on Wednesdays now. We've kind of worked out a schedule so that it's not going to be a guessing game on Wednesday anymore. And we had to deal with some kind of issues with kind of uploading that's kind of delayed the release of it. So it's been coming out later in the day as opposed to all coming out live. But I think we got that stuff worked out. So I'll look for that kind of early on Wednesday. And of course, we got our Friday politics roundup around 11 o'clock. Always kind of ticks a little bit later. I wish we could do it at 10:30 or so, and maybe we can. But between 10:30 and 11 on Friday, our politics news roundup. This was Sean Kitchen. We talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. But in the meantime, everybody, hey, take care of yourself. Take care of each other. We got to support each other. We got to be in there with this together so we can actually turn this mother around. So, see ya! I guess I'll fly away now.